Good morning, thank you very much. So thank you, Rabbi Reese, Peter, for arranging this morning. So I've been tasked with starting part of the halachic discussion, and I'm going to be discussing a particular halachic issue, certainly not answering all of the questions that Dr. Burns laid out. That's not my intention. Also, I'm not going to be answering any of the questions myself. I'm just going to be presenting the issues and trying to understand what the halacha, what the poskim have to say about it. So I'd like to make just two introductory comments. First of all, I'd like to nitpick on something that Dr. Burns had just mentioned. He said there are going to be certain people who we may not be obligated to treat. And the way I understood what Dr. Burns said is that meaning treating as in trying to continue giving them therapy to cure their disease. I think that there is absolutely no patient, however, that we shouldn't care for. Every single patient, no matter how terminal, no matter how forlorn, no matter how many minutes, seconds they have left, needs care. And we should never, ever confuse the two terms. And I think Dr. Burns is going to be in agreement with me, but I just want to make the point. And because sometimes this is lost, especially sometimes in the secular environment, again, in my very limited experience, sometimes the doctors, families will talk about giving up on the patient. I think that's a very scary term to use, giving up on the patient. We never give up on any patient. Every patient needs care. Every patient needs compassion. If all we can offer is palliative care because we can't cure this person's disease, then that's our mandate to offer palliative care, and we must do so. If this person is suffering, we are obligated to help alleviate that suffering in whatever way we can within the parameters of halacha. And that's caring for the patient. That's treating the patient. I would call it treating the patient. And I think we have to do that. We should never think that there's no patient who isn't deserving of our care and who we're not obligated to treat in some way, whether it's curing their disease if we can, and even if it's not curing their disease, then at least treating them like a human being, respecting them, their tzelem elokim, and trying to do whatever we can to make their time in this world as peaceful, as comfortable as possible. The second introductory question, the introductory remark I'd like to make is that while we're going to talk about medical therapies that can and should be done, or can and should not be done, or are discretionary to be done, this isn't really a medical question at all. We need the medicine to tell us, look, this patient is in whatever situation he's in, he has terminal cancer. Given everything we know about this patient's condition, about the possible therapies, the chances of him surviving more than 6 months is 5%, 10%, 15%, whatever it might be. The chances of therapy being successful are 5%, let's say. So is it worth doing or is it not worth doing? So if you think about it, that's not really a medical question. Is it worth doing? Leaving the question of resources and money out of it for a moment, which just for the sake of argument, let's do. Is that something worthwhile? So something that's worthwhile is going to be a question of value judgments. We're going to have to think about what do we value, what do we find important, and let's say if it's discretionary, somebody might say, for me, every second of life is important no matter how much suffering I have to suffer. And if that's a halachically acceptable position, we'll talk about it. So maybe that's something we should respect. We need the doctor to give their information, to give their experience, to say, you know, in my experience, this is a very uncomfortable procedure. A life going forward with this is going to be full of suffering, full of agony. Many people don't like it. But ultimately, it's a question of values and judgments, and we have to take into consideration everybody's values and judgments in making that decision. But it's not a question of solely medicine, yes or no. There's, as Dr. Burns said, this has to be made in a consultation with the doctors and the patient and the family's rabbi, often the family's rabbi, because the person is not always in the state of mind to make that determination on their own. And we have to have a meeting of the minds and to respect everyone's values and see what position we'll come to. So what I'd like to speak about now is how far do we really have to go? Leaving hospice aside for a moment, that'll be discussed a lot more in detail. Have a patient, how far do we have to go? To try to address some of Dr. Burns' questions, you have a patient who's dying. Must we put a patient on the ventilator? Must we give a patient hydration and nutrition? And let's say we already started giving the patient hydration and nutrition, or the patient is on the ventilator. And the patient is on the ventilator, and day goes by, 2 days go by, a week goes by, 2 weeks go by, and there's no improvement in this patient's status. Given all the data we have in front of us, we don't believe that this patient will improve in any way. Are there any options available to us? Must we leave the patient on the ventilator? Should we leave the patient on the ventilator? Maybe turn that ventilator off. So the question of how far we must go, and as Dr. Burns mentioned, and I indeed learned, I don't remember if it was in elementary school, in fourth grade, but certainly in high school, that we have to do everything possible always to keep everyone alive as long as possible. And this does have a source in halacha. And if you look at the source sheet, source 1, from Shulchan Aruch HaRachaim, this is from Hilchos Shabbos. The question is, how far on Shabbos are we allowed to go to Mechalel Shabbos to save someone's life? How desperate must they be? What are there certain circumstances where Chilul Shabbos is prohibited? So this is from Simon Shin Kaf Tes, if Dalil. Afilu Mitzo Merutzatz. So there's a building collapse, and they find someone, and he's Merutzatz. He is crushed. She'eino Yachol Lichyos Ela Lefi Sha'ah. And he cannot live other than Chayei Sha'ah. And I think here Chayei Sha'ah means very narrowly defined, very, very short time. He may not live till the end of Shabbos. Nonetheless, we go ahead, we mechalel Shabbos to try to rescue this person from the rubble, and we check to see if he's alive. If he's alive, then we continue whatever chilul Shabbos is necessary to try to save his life. Unfortunately, if he's not alive, then we leave him there, because on Shabbos we can't prepare for a funeral, we can't prepare the dead, and we leave him be. But you see from here, the Be'er Halacha points out, afilu merutzatz, eino yachol lichyos ela lefi sha'ah, he has no chance to live but a few moments. Nonetheless, every moment is important. We mechalel Shabbos to save his life. We do everything in our power, and if we're allowed to mechalel Shabbos to save his life, there must be a mitzvah to do so. Otherwise, why else would chilul Shabbos be permissible? There must be a mitzvah to do so, and therefore we do it even for the last couple of moments that this person has. And the Be'er Halacha points out, Mishnah Berurah, that it's not just whether the person's going to be conscious. Some of the poskim said, well, if he has a few moments, maybe he'll do tshuva. We know from the Kabbalistic Sfarim, from the Ma'avar Yavok, that the last moments of a person's life, there's a unique opportunity for tshuva, the Shechina is there, the person has a unique closeness to Hashem, so maybe that's why we're saving, we're trying to extend those very last moments. And the Be'er Halacha says, that's wonderful, that's true, but even in the comatose, he doesn't say comatose, but even the patient who's not awake, who will not be able to do tshuva, nonetheless, we try to do whatever we can, we mechalel Shabbos, we do everything we can. So interestingly, if you look at source 4, source 4 is from the Stipler, and it's from his igros, from his letters. And the Stipler had a very similar experience to Dr. Burns. He said, when I was growing up, I was also taught that you have to do everything possible to save someone's life no matter what. And you see, Shagam ani shamati bi yaldusi meimar kazu. V'lo yadati im zel mikbar samchahu. But I didn't know if, like, I heard this, and I wasn't sure if this is from a reliable person or not. This was what was going around. This isn't so clear. Now, there's a sniper realizing that when he became a Talmud Chacham many years later, he realized that this was not quite as simple as he would have first imagined. And he says, if you look at the Ramah in Yeridea, you don't really get that impression. So let's look at the Ramah in Yeridea. So this is in source 3. So this is the halachos of a goses. A goses is someone who is dying. We'll try to define it a little bit clearly a little bit later. Someone who's dying pretty soon, imminently, if you will. And the halacha is that a goses hareu kechai l'chol dvarav. Someone who's dying is alive. He's not dead, he's dying. And therefore, any of the halachos that relate to a person while he's alive certainly apply. Lagabe, regarding gibum, regarding chalitza, regarding truma, regarding all sorts of things, this person is considered alive. His status is living, and therefore we cannot treat him as he's dead. Similarly, we can't prepare for his funeral. We shouldn't do all those sorts of things. We don't prepare a burial plot. We don't start doing a tahara, God forbid, on the person who's still living, because this person's alive and we need to treat him as such. We need to respect him as such. So the Ramah, the Ramah Yisraelis in his comments there, adds a couple of lines. So if you look in source 3, V'chein aser ligrom l'meishigam usmehera. You're also not allowed to hasten death. Okay? If it's obvious that you have to treat the dying person as alive, and that you can't prepare for his funeral, you can't prepare for his burial, you can't prepare for the moment after, you also can't hasten his death. That's a violation of Lo Tirtzach, one of the Ten Commandments, one of the fundamental Isurim. So he gives an example. Kigon Mishu Goseis Zman Aruch V'lo Yuchal Yipareid. So you have someone who's a Goseis Zman Aruch. So I said Goseis was dying imminently. So he's a Goseis Zman Aruch. He's a Goseis for a longer period of time. And V'lo Yuchal Yipareid. And his soul cannot leave. And now the Ramah goes through different medieval medicines that you can and cannot do for this person. So I'm not a medieval doctor. I was trained more recently than that. So I don't really understand some of the medicine he's going to talk about. the point of what the Rama's comments are, and why would the Rama have codified this medieval medicine? I think he realized that, writing in the 1500s, that his medicine was very different from the medicine 500 years before, and I think he was very aware that our medicine is going to be very different than his. But nonetheless, he's codifying these specific nuances of what yes and what no to try to teach us, well, this is what we think we're doing, and you know, what do we think we're accomplishing with this therapy? And therefore, we should learn from that. So he says you can't take the pillow out from under the man's head, and you can't put the keys to the shul under his head, because that will cause him to die faster. And he tells him, because that will cause him to die faster. I don't know how keys to the shul cause someone to die faster. I don't necessarily know how moving a pillow out from under his head causes someone to die faster. The point is, I think the Rama is trying to say, don't do anything that will cause him to die faster. He then goes on to differentiate that, though, between, if you look in the third line, Aval im yesh davar shegorim ikuv yetzias hanefesh, if there's something there that's causing, that's inhibiting the soul's departure. Kigon. He says, now he gives another medieval medicine example. Sheyesh samach la'oso bayis kol dofik agon chotev eitzim. That there's next to this house someone who's chopping wood. And that chopping sound is keeping this person alive, whatever that means. O sheyesh melach ha'lashono. Or that there's salt on his tongue. Ve'elu me'akvin yetzias ha'nefesh. And the chopping sound or the salt on his tongue are preventing the soul from leaving. Mutter la'asiro misham. That you're allowed to remove. That's not considered an action. That's just removing an impediment to the soul's departure. So again, leaving the medieval medicine aside, I don't exactly know how tree chopping works. I don't know how salt keeps someone alive. We can speculate. I think any reasons we'll come up with will be different than those that the Rama had thought, really coming from the Sefer Hasidim hundreds of years before. But his point is differentiating between that which is preventing the soul from leaving and that which is hastening death. So, first of all, we're going to have to try to figure out, well, what does that mean in the modern context? What is preventing the soul from leaving and what is hastening death? In medical school, at least in my medical school, we were not trained to look for the soul. I don't know when it's leaving. I can't tell. So how do I know what's preventing the soul from leaving and how do I know what's hastening death? How are we going to apply that to the modern medicine? And secondly, what is this difference and what is it based on? So to the first point of the Rama, that we can't hasten death, it comes from a Mishnah in Shabbos, it's also in the Maseches Smachos, if you look in Source 2. The Mishnah says, "Ein ma'atzmimes ha'meis b'Shabbos." You can't close the eyes of a mace on Shabbos. V'lo b'chol, right? Because he's dead and we're not, he's muktzah and we can't touch him. V'lo b'chol im yitzias ha'nefesh. And not even during the week, can't close his eyes, im yitzias ha'nefesh, while he's dying. Okay, and the Mishnah goes on to say, it's a little bit scary, v'ha'ma'atzmim yitzias ha'nefesh ha'reza shofech damim. And if you do close the eyes of a goseis, of someone who's im yitzias ha'nefesh as he's dying, even during the week, it's as if you've murdered this person. Unclear a little bit why. The Gemara elaborates, Tan Rabbanan, ha'me'atzmo im yitzias ha'nefesh ha'reza shofech damim, rephrasing the Mishnah a little bit, why, mashal l'ner, it's comparable to a candle, shekava, that's about the kava v'holeches. The candle is flickering, it's about to go out. Adam miniach etzvoa le'amiyad kafta. Even though the candle is flickering and about to go out, if you put your finger on that candle, it'll go out a couple of seconds earlier. So even while that person's dying, you putting your finger on him, you changing something, Rashi explains, paraphrasing Rashi, you stress him a little bit, you don't know what that's going to do. Even closing the eyes is an unnecessary movement for this person, it's not helping him in any way, and maybe we should be concerned that that extra stress is going to kill this person sooner. If you're very careful not to do anything to hasten this person's death in any way. To such an extreme that even closing the eyes is going to be forbidden. So, while we know some things are forbidden, and closing the eyes is going to be one example, some things are nonetheless permissible. Removing the salt, stopping the woodchopper is permissible. So, if we think about it now, so we have one source that seems to say we have to do everything we can in Shabbos, and in Hilchos Shabbos, and it seems to be that if you have to do everything in Hilchos Shabbos, that we have a permission to do so. Right? There's a mitzvah to save this person's life. Why can I mechallel Shabbos to save someone's life? Because there's a mitzvah to do so. If there's a mitzvah to do so, seemingly I'm obligated in doing so. If I have to save this person's life and do everything in my power to keep him alive, which is what would sound like from Hilchos Shabbos, how can the Rama then say, well, there are certain things that are okay, and clearly according to the Rama, there are certainly things that are going to be okay, permissible at least to remove the salt, to stop the woodchopper. If I would have asked, if I only had the first source, I would have said, go find the woodchopper and have him start chopping wood. It seems to be a little bit of a contradiction. So So some of the poskim, in fact, say, Mitzvah Eliezer among them, he says, you're right. This is a contradiction. You can't both have a mitzvah to mechalal Shabbos to save someone's life every last moment and still be permitted to remove certain things at the end of life. He says this is an absolute contradiction. And how does he resolve this contradiction? He says that we go with Hilcha Shabbos. Tzitz Eliezer is of the opinion, he's one of the more extreme positions on this matter, that we must do everything in our power to keep someone alive as long as possible, like it says in Hilcha Shabbos. What was the Ramah talking about? The Ramah was talking about some strange things, chopping wood. He's talking about someone who's pretty much dead. He said, this person is really, really, really dead. He just looks like he's alive. So we're concerned that he might really still be alive. We don't really think he is, so you can stop doing whatever it is you're doing. Short of that, everything has to be done. So Dr. Avram Steinberg, who is the author of the Encyclopedia of Chatei Refuit, has letters back and forth to the Tzitz Eliezer, and he says, whoa, I don't understand. The person that the Ramah is talking about is alive or dead? And the Tzitz Eliezer responds, no, he's actually dead. He just looks like he's alive. It's very clear. So he's marginalizing this psak completely. He says, we really must do everything in our power always to keep someone alive as long as possible, no matter what. He thinks, again, that there's a mitzvah to alleviate suffering, just like there's a mitzvah to alleviate any type of pain and any type of ailment, and he considers suffering to be an ailment as well, but nonetheless to keep him alive as long as possible. That's one of the more extreme positions on this issue. Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach, however, he says, you know, there is this contradiction, and many people are bothered by this contradiction. He says, I'm not. He says, why not? He says, the fact that you're allowed to mechal al Shabbos doesn't mean that you have to. There's a certain area of discretion within halacha. At certain points, a person can have the choice to say yes or no. Under certain circumstances, a person can choose to want his life extended or to say, let's not do anything more at this point. And he says, at least in theory, that's to explain this difference. He says, the path of the tzaddikim, the path of a truly righteous people, is to want to be alive as long as possible in this world. To live in this world for even a moment is better than the whole world to come. And that's the path of the tzaddikim, despite suffering, despite what a person might be going through. It's a kaparas avonos. A person should want to be alive as long as possible. And that's really the true path of tzaddikim. But halacha is aware that not everyone can stand up to that ideal. And it's not a fault, it's a reality. And therefore, built into the halacha is a permission that we don't all have to always strive to be tzaddikim. And he says, and therefore, sometimes, we're allowed to do certain things, what the Ramah's talking about, we'll discuss what Rav Shlomo Zalman thinks is appropriate, that we can stand by and say, ad kan, until here, no more. And there's no necessarily contradiction between the two. There are other things in halacha that are discretionary. Something that Dr. Burns also mentioned about risky therapy. Let's say you have a patient who with some type of terminal cancer, and there is a surgery that can be done to try to cure him, but I won't necessarily call it experimental. The odds are not with us. It only has a 40% chance of succeeding, a 30% chance of succeeding. On the other hand, the person, maybe there's a 20, 30% chance that the guy will die on the table. We don't know. Are we allowed to do such a thing? So most postkin would say yes. I'm not going to analyze that now. But there's no obligation to do so, according to Rav Shlomo Zalman. He says, you have the discretion. You have the choice to opt in or to opt out. And so too here. You have the discretion at some points to opt in or opt out. So that explains why the mitzvah of saving someone's life may apply in certain circumstances and not in others. And we didn't really define where and when we'll do that. But there's another problem. In halacha, not only is there a mitzvah to save a person's life, let's say someone who's completely salvageable, we could save his life, there's a mitzvah to try to do everything we can. You see someone, you call Hatzalah, we bring him to the hospital, we mechal Shabbos, we do everything we can in the hospital to try to save someone get hit by a car, God forbid. We do everything we can. There's also a prohibition of lo tamar al dam re'echa. Do not stand idly by your brother's blood. The Gemara says that if you see someone suffering, you see someone in pain, you're not allowed to stand by and do nothing. You have to do that which is in your power to save him, otherwise you violate a prohibition. So there's a positive mitzvah to do everything you can, and there's a negative mitzvah, prohibition, to just stand idly by. So even yes, there might not be a mitzvah to save this person's life, but why did I not violate lo tamar al dam re'echa? Even if I'm standing by and I'm saying, look, this person's suffering, this person doesn't require, and there's no mitzvah to save his life anymore, but I'm still not doing anything. Why am I not obligated because of lo tamar al dam reacha, to continue his life as long as possible. And so this is where the issue starts to come down, where the poskim try to establish what we can do, what we can't do, and under what parameters that may or may not be done. So whereas the Tzitz Eliezer of Eliezer Yehuda Waldenberg was on the extreme on one position, so it's important to realize that Tzitz Eliezer, in his 22 volumes of Tshuvos, I would venture to say, again, not a scientific analysis, he has more psukim about medicine, science, and halacha than any other set of Tshuvos on the planet. He lived down the block from the old Shaarei Tzedek Medical School. He was the unofficial posek of Shaarei Tzedek for many years. He gave shiur in the hospital to doctors two or three times a week. He was very intimately aware of what was going on and was very willing to deal with it. I would not call him a posek of the modern world, but he was very willing to engage in it. He was very willing to engage in topics that other poskim would not. He has a sefer called HaTorah VeHaMedina that after Israel conquered Yerushalayim in 1967, he wrote a whole book about how we should deal with the status of Yerushalayim now that it's governed by a Jewish state, a topic that many other poskim wouldn't touch for fear of political repercussions. So he felt himself beyond politics. He was really willing to engage in all these topics, and he really had a familiarity with this. This was his unique position. It was rather extreme. Parallel to him, Reb Chaim David Halevi, who was one of the Rav HaRashis of Tel Aviv, Sephardi Posek, he thought the matter was very simple. He said, there's no lo tamar al dam reacha by a dying patient. Simple as that. By a goseis, there's no lo tamar al dam reacha. The Torah said lo tamar al dam reacha. It means by someone who's not dying. Someone who's dying, there's no lo tamar al dam reacha. And he went so far as to say that, therefore, you don't have to treat this patient. There's no mitzvah to treat him. There's no lo tamar al dam reacha. And you can stop all treatment all as well. You can turn off a ventilator. You can stop his feeding. We should never, he's very clear, numerous times, a very long article he has on this. He says we should never let somebody suffer, never. We have an obligation to treat this person's suffering as much as we possibly can. But you can shut everything off. There's no real reason to do so. Rav Avadia Hadaya, also a Sephardi Posek in the 50s, he was a Rosh Hashiva of Yeshivas Beis El. After it was moved, after the Jordanians conquered Jerusalem in 1948, it was moved actually to the roof of his house in the new city. He also has a tshuva. He's talking about a dying patient. Sounds like a patient dying from cancer of some sort. Not imminently, in the next couple of months. That's what it seems like at least. And he says, there's no lo tamar al dam reacha, this patient's dying. So even if we will take, so this position is not very also well accepted. Those are the two extreme positions. But even if we have to adopt, who are we talking about? I think certainly Rav Ovadia Hadaya's position is not accepted at all. We're talking about someone who has months to live. Who is this goseis that we're talking about? Who is this goseis that the Ramah is referring to? So Rav Moshe Feinstein says, you can't ask a doctor who the goseis is. There's no disease, there's no physiological state that corresponds to a goseis. You want to know what a goseis is? Go ask the Chevra Kadishas of 100 years ago. They knew. It's not very helpful. If there's no actual physiological sign, there's no blood pressure, there's no blood test I can do to find out if someone's a goseis. Some doctors, and I've been in the presence of some, are able to predict with pretty good accuracy, walking into a patient's room, this patient only has 2 or 3 days to live, which is somewhat uncanny. There was a story in Reader's Digest about a cat that was able to walk around a nursing home, and whenever the cat would go into this person's room, then they knew that person was going to die within 24 hours also. Also with uncanny accuracy. I don't believe that's what Rav Moshe Feinstein was talking about, but Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach also said to Dr. Abraham, the author of Nishmas Avram, Dr. Abraham asked him, how do I define a goseis? I don't understand. There's halachos of a goseis. We're not allowed to close the eyes of a goseis. Who is this patient? And he said, Rav Shlomo Zalman turned to him and said, Ata Rofe, you're the doctor. He writes, Adkan Dvarav, and he moves on to another topic. So again, it's going to be very hard to decide. We know in halacha that in a different context, if someone has to start sitting shiva when a person dies. Now, back in the day when there was the communication lines were not as easily open, people could live in different cities far away from each other. If a messenger would come and tell someone that they saw their relative, a goseis, more than 3 days ago, the assumption was that that person died. If a person was a goseis for more than 3 days, if Reuven finds out that his sister was a goseis 3 days ago, he starts sitting shiva. He can assume that this person has died, because most goseisim will die within 3 days. The assumption there is that this person will die in 3 days no matter what we do, otherwise we couldn't start sitting Shiva. According to some poskim, we can even allow, if it's a man, we can allow the woman to remarry based on this information. It's pretty certain. So it means that no matter what we'll do to this person will certainly die within 3 days. That much I haven't met a doctor who's willing to say. That no matter what we do, no matter how much medicine we will put into this patient, they can't last more than 3 days exactly. Because it's not an exact science. We can keep the ventilator on, we can do CPR. Should we or should we not is a different question. So the question is this person going to be a ghost ace or not? Technically, according to the strict criteria, some of the postmen have told me that they haven't found a doctor willing to sign on a dotted line that no matter what I do for this patient, they're not going to last more than 3 days. And so we need to look for a little bit other criteria for when this should apply. So we'll see three other differences, we'll see three other criterias. Rav Schechter says, Rav Schechter, Rosh Hashiva here, he has a piece in the Ikvei Atzon, in his second Sefer, where he says, a person really has the right to determine for himself what he considers to be Pikuach Nefesh. As long as I'm of sound mind, or Rav Schechter would say normal, Rav Schechter has a particular definition of normal, as long as I'm normal, I have a right to determine for myself whether I consider this to be Pikuach Nefesh or not. As long as most people wouldn't disagree with me. So if I were to tell you, you know, this person's dying from cancer in 3 years and he has strep throat and he doesn't want to treat it because he doesn't want to take the amoxicillin, Shakur would say that's not normal. Amoxicillin, you should take amoxicillin. There's no harm in taking amoxicillin. But what about chemotherapy? What about radiation? So therapies that come with an extreme sense of suffering that aren't always successful, very painful, difficult for the patient, difficult for the family, that already Rav Schechter thinks is more of a discretion. The person has a choice. He can choose for himself what he considers to be Pikuach Nefesh. And given that a person can choose what he considers to be Pikuach Nefesh for himself, if a person chooses to say, this is not for me, then that person, there's no mitzvah of Pikuach Nefesh for him. And similarly, the person doesn't violate Lo Tamid Al Damar Yecha on himself. Right? A person is similarly obligated to treat himself by Lo Tamid Al Damar Yecha, Lo Tamid on his own blood. Thank you. So if the person himself is not obligated, so then, me, as a bystander, I'm similarly not obligated. So, how to explain the Gemara? That's what the Ramah is talking about. The Ramah is assuming that there are certain times where we can assume for a patient that this is what the patient may have said before. He chose, this is the path he wanted. He did not want to be kept alive by this wood chopper, and that we're going to be considered within the realm of normal, meaning most people will assume that that's a reasonable decision, and that's going to be something that's allowed. The Shulchan Aruch in Shin Kaftes in Hilchos Shabbos is talking about someone who either we don't know what they would have wanted, or we think there's a reasonable chance of saving him. There's a reasonable chance of him coming to his senses and maybe he'll be awakened. We could actually ask him. But the person who's Merutzah, it's the person who's crushed under the building, we may not know what he wants, we don't really know what's going on, we're a little bit in a panic situation, we're going to do whatever we can. The Ramah is talking about someone who's dying who already made his wishes known. This is a different situation. Similarly, Rav Zalman Nechemya Goldberg, he's a member of the Beit Din HaRabbani. He was a member of the Beit Din HaRabbani in Yerushalayim. Shlita is still alive. He just retired from that. There's apparently retirement age for the Beit Din HaRabbani HaGadol. So he says, when he wants to know, Lo Tamid Al Damar Yecha is when you're doing a favor for the patient. Lo Tamid Al Damar Yecha, when I'm standing idly by my brother's blood, and it's to his own detriment. But when Tov Moso Mechayev, when death is preferable to life, again, this is going to be a value judgment. There's no prohibition of Lo Tamid Al Damar Yecha. He says, and that's what the Ramah is talking about. The Ramah is saying, in that situation, death is preferable to life, and therefore there's no violation of Lo Tamid Al Damar Yecha. He has a technical way to get out of the Gemara, the Halacha by Shabbos, and he says, well, if Tov Moso Mechayev, then it's okay. If death is preferable to life, yeah, then it's okay to refrain from doing things. If life is preferable to death, we should certainly continue. He doesn't really give parameters to know how to judge that, though. And like I said, it's a value judgment. So if a person's suffering terribly, I think we would all agree, maybe we wouldn't all agree, I think many people would reasonably assume that this person's life is full of suffering, of agony, there's nothing we can do. We can try to treat his pain, it's not working. There are certain types of pain which, unfortunately, we cannot treat. But on the other hand, Baruch Hashem, now with palliative medicine making more strides and being more aware and doctors being more comfortable in using it, there are many types of pain that we can treat. Many people are suffering, and we can actually treat their pain. There are side effects. They may be bedbound as a result of their pain. They may not be. They may be asleep completely as a result of the pain medication that we're giving them. We give a person morphine, but he'll be sleeping. He won't be awake. He won't be able to interact with his family. We can give people all sorts of things. We can put them on the ventilator and try to alleviate all of their pain. So is this person tov moso mechayev? Is his life preferable to death? Or is death preferable to life? He's not in any, we don't think he's in any pain. According to all of our best estimates, this person is not suffering at all. He is lying in the bed attached to machines and has no hope of recovery. Razam Nachamed doesn't really give parameters by how to judge that. Ramosha Feinstein, though, does. As Dr. Burns mentioned, Ramosha Feinstein has several tshuvos trying to deal with these issues of end-of-life care. And he says, well, let's think about it. How are we going to understand lo tam al damar yachar? Why? Rav Chaim David HaLevi said it doesn't apply to a goseis. Rav Shachter said that it applies when I have a discretion here. But what's the halachic mechanism by which that works? So he says, well, think about it. All mitzvahs have a cost, whether it's time, whether it's energy, whether it's money. All mitzvahs have a cost, right? How much do I have to spend on an esrog? How much effort do I have to spend to make it to minyan on time? Everything has a cost, and we take that into account when we perform a mitzvah. If I only have $100, and the only esrog in town costs $100, am I obligated to give up everything I have in order to buy that one esrog? So the halacha is no. The halacha is, for a positive mitzvah, we're only obligated to expend up to 20% of our assets. Up to 20% and not more. To not violate a prohibition, however, you have to give up everything you have. So if one of the ways of illustrating this is, there's a person stuck on a desert island and there's a kosher sandwich and a non-kosher sandwich in front of you, and the kosher sandwich costs $100 and that's all you're stranded with, you may be obligated to expend all your money to avoid eating the non-kosher sandwich. All of your money has to be expended. So how do we understand lo tamar al damriyacha? Lo tamar al damriyacha is definitely a prohibition. So you'd think at first glance, at least, I have to do everything in my power to avoid violating the prohibition. On the other hand, it's a prohibition that you violate by standing idly by. Most other prohibitions, chilul Shabbos, you have to do something in order to violate. Lo tignov, you have to do something in order to violate. Eating non-kosher, you do something in order to violate. Lo tamar al damriyacha is a lav shein b'maisa. You violate it by standing idly by. You didn't do anything. So the Pisrei Tshuva goes through it. Some poskim say like this, some poskim say like that. Rav Moshe Feinstein says, it's irrelevant. He says, even if you have to expend all of your money, kol mamono, to avoid violating this prohibition, he says, all you have to do is expend all your money. There are certain things that are worth more than all of your money. Only up to all kol mamono and not beyond. And therefore, there's certain types of suffering, certain types of pain and agony that a person can go through that are worth more to the person than all of his money. He cites that Gemara about Rebbe, that Rabbi Reis quoted. That Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi, who was dying, and that his maidservant davened to Hashem that the tefillos of the Talmidim should not be accepted, that he should die peacefully. The Ran in the Darim quotes that's sometimes an obligation, that sometimes we're supposed to daven for a person to die. Now that's a big machlokas, because the Ran is not quoted anywhere else. That Ran is not quoted in Shulchan Aruch. It's not quoted by pretty much anyone else until the early 1900s. And there's a big question, do we paskin like this Ran at all? The Tzitz Eliezer points out, well, if you think about it, the whole Beis Medrash is davening that Rebbe should live. And his maidservant, who we think very highly of in the Gemara, is davening that she should die. Who are we going to paskin like in the machlokas? He says we should paskin like the Beis Medrash. And even if we think we should paskin like the maidservant, all she did was daven and stop davening. She didn't take any action. But Rav Moshe Feinstein sees from here, he says, regardless of what conclusion you're going to draw, you see that there's certain types of pain and suffering that we need to take into consideration. The Gemara doesn't censor the maidservant. It says nothing bad about her. So at least it's neutral. There was definitely nothing maybe wrong with what she did. And therefore, he says, there are certain types of suffering that a person goes through that are worth more than his entire money, than everything he has. And at that point, there's no violation of lo tamar al damriyacha. He says a gosei, someone who's dying, and again, he thought you have to be able to see the gosei and determine based on what you're looking at. He says a gosei is someone whose soul is trying to leave. That's painful. That's spiritually painful. And he writes explicitly. And even if the doctors can't see it on their monitors, they have no idea how to explain. This patient looks completely, completely calm. If we know that he's a ghost and his soul is about to leave, this patient is suffering. When the soul leaves the body, that is painful, that is spiritually painful, even if you can't see it. And this person does not have an obligation of lo tamid al damriyacha, because it's beyond what he has to give up. Now, he points out, and Rosh Zalman Norbach reiterates this, it's, again, it's discretionary. The person doesn't have to do this. He can opt in if he'd like to, and Rosh Zalman Norbach, if you recall, said that was truly the path of the tzaddikim, but there's certainly a permission to say, I don't need to spend any more. So practically, how did we come out then? What do we do with these end-of-life therapies? So going through the different approaches that we saw before, Reb Chaim David HaLevi, who thought that it applies to a goseis, that there's no violation of lo tamid al damriyacha, he also is of the opinion that there's no difference between withholding and withdrawing. Withholding means not actually doing something to the patient, standing idly by and waiting, not initiating therapy, not putting on the ventilator, not giving feeding, and withdrawing, which means once the therapy has been started, to remove it. He sees no difference between the two. He says that it's permissible to remove any therapy from a dying patient. You don't have to start it, and you may withdraw it once it's started. Again, I think this is a position that was not adopted by the poskim. The Tzitz Eliezer, on the other hand, on the other extreme, says you have to do everything in your power, no matter what, no matter what's going on, to extend this patient's life as long as possible. Certainly try to alleviate their suffering. Certainly, that's your primary obligation, because that's the only thing you can actually treat right now. You can keep him alive, and you can treat his suffering. That's all you can do. Then you're obligated to do that, but do it as long as possible. I think those are the two extreme approaches, and while there are pros and cons, we'll hold each of those, I think that's not the mainstream approach. Rav Shechter's approach, which is somewhat more in the middle, when he said he allows a patient to decide on his own what I consider to be pikuach nefesh for myself and what I don't, he says, well, that's true, and I won't violate, if I consider something that's, for me, that's too much, and I'm considered to be normal, and that's reasonable, chemotherapy for the 10th time when the chances of it succeeding are only 2%, that's certainly a reasonable decision to say, let's hold off. He says, well, that's a reasonable option to say, let's hold off, and I won't violate lo tamid al damriyacha. But lo tamid al damriyacha means, when I stand idly by, I didn't violate the prohibition. It does not allow me to do anything active. It means that while I'm being passive, I don't violate a prohibition. He says, and you have to remember that first part of the Ramah, V'chein asr ligram lameis lagosis yomus mehera. You can't do anything active that will cause the patient to die sooner. You can stand idly by. That's going to be no violation of lo tamod in this situation. But you definitely don't, you may not remove any therapy. So according to Rav Shechter, if a patient requires more chemotherapy in order to try to continue to cure his disease, he could say, I don't want it. But if a patient's on the ventilator, and shutting off that ventilator, that's his own pretty much sole source of breathing, the patient maybe can breathe a little bit on his own, but without the ventilator, the patient would die, Rav Shechter would say, you can't shut off the ventilator, because that's actively causing his death. He would say, however, and so Rav Moshe Feinstein talks about a different situation in his day, and I don't know when this was changed, but apparently at one point, ventilators were using oxygen tanks. The ventilator is this big machine that was brought next to the patient's bed that had an oxygen tank. So the question would be, well, once the oxygen tank is empty, do I have to refill it? Is that active or passive? If I stand by and do nothing and the oxygen tank empties out, maybe that would be okay. Maybe that's considered passive. I didn't violate lo tamid al damriyacha. I didn't do anything active. Today, I have never seen, my very limited experience, I don't think that oxygen tanks are very much used on ventilators anymore. Oxygen is generally pumped in through the pipes in the building, and you connect it to the wall, and it's provided continuous flow. And so that's really not much of an option. However, if there's a medication, vasopressors are a medication that helps someone's blood pressure stay up. Sometimes that bag empties, and it has to be changed every X number of hours. If this would be a position, a point where a patient could say, I don't want any more, or the family can say this is what the patient would have wanted. Often the patients in this situation are not able to communicate their own desires. Then you wouldn't have to refill that bag because you could stand by and not do anything. But you can't ever do anything active. So interestingly, Rav Moshe Feinstein and Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach take somewhat of a middle approach that I think Dr. Burns hinted at earlier. They said by a suffering patient, we don't have to initiate therapy. That's what the Ramah said. We don't have to treat someone who's suffering that will just increase their length of time that they're suffering. We should definitely try to treat their suffering, but we don't have to keep a person alive just for the purpose of continuing his suffering. We can't treat this patient. So we don't have to, and maybe we're prohibited from doing so. He says, yeah, but that applies to medicine. We don't have to treat this patient. And Rav Shlomo Zalman is very clear about this. He says, well, there are certain things that aren't medicine, though. Food, hydration, nutrition, basic medications, routine procedures are not considered medicine. Those are things that you don't have a right to withhold, because removing those, he thought, would be considered active. Basic needs of a person. The Rama was talking about medieval medicine. And again, we don't understand exactly what he meant, but those were the medieval ways of treating a patient. He doesn't say don't feed the patient. He doesn't say don't help him drink. He's talking about medical therapies, and those medical therapies you can withhold from. So Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach is very clear. You have to continue nutrition. You have to continue hydration. You have to continue oxygen. Oxygen breathing is a basic necessity. A person's on the ventilator, you definitely cannot shut it off. Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach went even a little bit farther and said routine medications. A person's taken insulin for the last 20 years of his life. For him, that's part of his nutrition. That's part of his daily routine. You have to keep giving him the insulin. A person's been getting hemodialysis for the last 10 years of his life. You have to continue the dialysis. Dialysis for patients with renal failure. Their kidneys don't work. They get put onto a machine that filters their blood for them. You'd have to continue to do it. He says, but you have to think about it. That's only routine. So if this person's been getting it for the last 10 years, then that's part of who he is. That's part of his basic needs. That no longer qualifies as medicine. But if a patient would all of a sudden come into the hospital and then need dialysis, and he's never gotten it before, or a person would all of a sudden need insulin, and he's never needed it before, he would say, well, that's not routine for this patient. So for Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, it's really important that when we're making this decision, that the rabbi speak to the doctor. We have to be aware of what's going on. The rabbi has to be completely informed of the patient's situation, because it's not this medicine yes and this medicine no. Sometimes insulin yes, sometimes insulin no. It depends on the patient, because the permission is only to remove, according to Rav Shlomo Zalman, medications, but not regular therapy. Rav Moshe Feinstein is a little bit broader. He's talking about food and oxygen and hydration. He says nutrition, hydration, and oxygen you have to provide, because those are basic needs of keeping someone alive. He uses a little bit of a different language. He says those are basic needs of life, and therefore you cannot remove them ever. He doesn't say medicine. Some poskim assume he says medicine. Some poskim assume he doesn't say medicine. We're going to leave that for the moment. He assumes that removing those things are removing some way that this person can live. And therefore, you can't remove those ever. And so, what we've seen is that there seem to be in halacha different trends of thought. At one hand, we saw that there's an obligation to do whatever we can. And at some point, there's a halacha that says that we can hold back and not necessarily participate in extending this patient's life. And what we try to show is that there are different approaches to how to balance these two elements, these two modes of thought in halacha. So different approaches. We saw the two extreme positions of Chaim David HaLevi. He says you can really hold back from anything. There's no real reason to continue if a patient doesn't want to, if he's dying. We saw the opinion of the Tzitz Eliezer, of Eliezer Yehuda Waldenberg, who pretty much says you always do everything no matter what. I think, again, those two positions are the two extremes, and they're not quite as well accepted. We saw the position of Rav Schechter, who says that pretty much you have a lot of discretion, but only in actively doing something, only in passively standing by, but never actively engaging. And the position of Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach and Rav Moshe Feinstein, which I think at least is more accepted amongst the poskim, amongst some of the rabbanim, that yes, there are certain times we don't have to increase a person's suffering, but there are certain basic needs of a patient that we have to maintain at all costs. And I think what this reflects is what Rabbi Reis was talking about before, or Dr. Burns was talking about before. There's a sense of we sanctify life. We think life is a wonderful thing. Living in this world is a bracha once it's there. And we have to try to balance those two pillars together. We don't want to increase suffering, but we want to affirm life. And so I think these poskim in doing this are trying to accomplish that very difficult goal.